So we're about to begin a sugya concerning a real Yaakov asking a non-Jew to do certain activities on Shabbos. It probably becomes the most relevant halacha l'maaseh for us in terms of very real shaila that come up all the time. What are some of the parameters of when it is permissible, when it is prohibited? So the starting point is really something that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. We introduced the prohibition of a real Yaakov. There's no question that generally to ask a non-Jew on Shabbos is a problem, to ask them to do something you're not allowed to do. We saw a possibility that if it involves a mitzvah, so there was one lone sheet in the Rishonim that said that the entire prohibition of Emir Yaakov is lifted b'mokom mitzvah, and we generally don't follow that. Although the Ramah does concede that there were some people in Europe who had the colloquial Shabbos guide that was based on this and that opinion, but again, the normative halacha, we try not to rely on that. With all that said, we do find certain situations where we do permit Emir Yaakov in situations of mitzvah or the like, and the question is, what possible leniencies would we accept the halacha? So the sugya begins, going back to something that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, sugya Masechet Eruvin and Daf Samach Zayin Amud Beis, when the Gemara tells us a story about how Yenuka Dishtapa Chamimei, there was a baby, they were about to do a bris milah, and we mentioned a couple of weeks ago in the days of Chazal, it was considered to be necessary to wash the baby off with warm water, both before the milah and after the milah. Because not as if we don't do that anymore, but in the olden days that was considered to be a necessity, and one could not do the milah unless the water was prepared. If one didn't prepare the water before Shabbos, then you can have a big problem, you won't be able to do the milah. So the question was, one time they actually prepared the water, and the water spilled, so now what do you do? So Amar Rabba Nesu Lechamim Migo Beisai. So Rabba said, well, let's carry some of the water anyway. Let's see if we can carry the water. So the Gemara goes on a whole long discussion how exactly Rabba was going to permit that. Was there an Eruv? Was there no Eruv? Was it to a Jew, through a non-Jew? Bottom line, roll the dust settles. So the Gemara concludes that the solution that Rabba had to quote-unquote carry the water, what that really meant was to carry the water invoking the principle of Amir Yaakov. We could ask a non-Jew to carry the water for us, and that would presumably be okay. And the question is, why exactly is that okay? Doesn't this fly in the face of what we just mentioned a few minutes ago, that Amir Yaakov is not lifted even in a Mokom Mitzvah? So it's for this that the Rambam clearly is telling us, is addressing in the second of the Maamar Kamos. The Rambam of Chashabas Perek Vav Lachetes tells us, Dover She'ena Malacha Ve'en Oser La'asosa B'Shabas Ela Mishum Shvus. Something which is not involved in Malacha D'Araisa, it's only also with the Rabbanon, Shvus being an Issur D'Rabbanon El Chashabas, Mutal Yisrael Lom L'Goy La'asosa B'Shabas. One is permitted to ask a non-Jew to do something where even if you yourself would have done that action, it would have only been a derabanan. That's what we call an halacha, a shvus to shvus. That's already twice removed from a deraisa. Number one, it's a non-Jew doing it, not a Jew. So that in of itself is a derabanan. And number two, the act involved is only prohibited in the derabanan itself. So even if I would do it myself, it would only be a derabanan. So combine those two factors to ask a non-Jew to do a derabanan would be okay. Not always, says the Ram. The Ram qualifies this. So the Ram gives three examples as to when we're willing to be naked on this. Number one is for reasons of illness. So the Ram was very careful to say, mitzas choli, the person is a little bit ill. Because if the person was really ill, if he was a real choli, it's a choli sheyesh bo sakana, then you can do it yourself. If it's a choli she'ein bo sakana, someone who's ill but not quite dangerously ill, then you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do even melachas derais, as we learned several weeks ago. The Rambam is telling you a third level of choli. It doesn't feel so well, not doing so great. So to do a derais, of course, is out of the question. Even to do an outright Amir Yaakov on a derais, it would also be a problem. But to ask a non-Jew to do a derabanan in a situation of a mitzvah choli, or tzarech adavet tzarech harbe, there's some tremendous need, many folks can add on, perhaps even a financial need, there's a tremendous hefsed mamon, and the part that interests us most is mitzvah mitzvah, whatever is considered to be the mokom mitzvah, that would also suffice as enough of a necessity to permit Amir Yaakov on a derabanan. Where in the world did the Rambam get this from? The answer is he got from this Gemara. The Gemara says that you're allowed to ask the non-Jew to carry the water. Well, how bad is it, this act of carrying the water? What if I would carry the water myself? Would that be a deraisa? Well, carrying is a malacha deraisa, but not all over the world. Carrying is only malacha deraisa in a rishus harabim deraisa, only in an area that, according to the Torah's definition, is a real bona fide rishus harabim. Many, many areas, for a variety of technical reasons, don't meet those criteria, including most probably all of our neighborhoods. Usually, any neighborhood that has what we call colloquially did an Erev, by definition, is not a Rosh Hashanah Deraisa. The Gemara tells us that if you have an area that's a Rosh Hashanah Deraisa, the only way to make an Erev is to surround it literally with walls and doors and lock the doors at night, something which we can't quite pull off in our communities. So our community Erev are based on a principle called Tiras HaPesach, literally putting up wires and poles and making, in a sense, make-believe doorways. That principle of Tiras HaPesach only works in an area that would not otherwise be a Rosh Hashanah Deraisa. If it would be a Rosh Hashanah Deraisa, then all bets would be off in terms of our Erev. So most of our communities meet those criteria, but they're not quite Rosh Hashanah Deraisa for a variety of reasons. So too in the days of Chazal, there are many areas, including where Rabbah lived, that also probably wasn't the Rosh Hashanah Deraisa, and therefore to ask the non-Jew to carry the water would be a shvus to shvus, which normally would be also, but the Macha Mitzvah is permissible. And now the Rambam illustrates this in Halacha Yud. The Rambam gives you a few more examples of this. Ketzad. What are some examples of asking a non-Jew to do a derabbanan for the Macha Mitzvah? Omer Yisrael the Goy b'Shabbos, Lalos b'Ilon, Olashut aprehamayim kidei lavi lo shofar. He's quoting from a sugi Maseches Rosh Hashanah that if a Jew realizes on Yom Tov he doesn't have a shofar, the only shofar in town happens to be on top of a tree. So we've been learning the Kolaboka this week. That's it. There is an issa derabbanan to climb a tree on Shabbos in Yom Tov as a gezeira, afraid you may come to pull something off of the tree. But that issa derabbanan of climbing a tree was lifted if it's done through a non-Jew for the purposes of tkiyah shofar. Olashut aprehamayim, or the first has to go swimming in order to get the shofar. Normally to swim on Shabbos and Yom Tov is prohibited in the Rabbanan. Kedei lavi lo shofar, for the purpose of getting a shofar would be permissible. Or sachin lemila, or to get a knife for the bris mila. Or maybe lo mechatzu lechotze she'en eiru b'neyam ma'im chamin l'harchiz ben katan mitzad chen kaziyotzi b'zen. The Rambam clearly was referring to this Gemara earlier on in Maseches Erevin, that to get the water, to get the knife, etc., whatever is necessary for Macha Mitzvah is permissible ayyadei goy if it involves only a shvus d'shvus. So this is the way we assume the halacha, like this Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch quotes different opinions about this, but we assume the halacha following the shittus of Rambam, based on this Gemara Maseches Erevin, that a shvus to shvus the Macha Mitzvah is permissible. Which of course makes it all the more important for us to know when we're dealing with particular shaylas, are we dealing with their isis or are we dealing with their abundance? Most of the time we say, what's the difference, their isis, their abundance? Also anyway, we observe their isis, we observe their abundance. Who cares when it's their isis, their abundance? It matters a lot in Lumbus, but now it matters Lamaisa as well. If it's a Deraisa, then Amir Yaakov is going to be Usher on it, even Macha Mitzvah. If it's a Derabbanan, then it's going to be okay. So just to highlight one particular example that constantly comes up, most of us don't get the shalas of climbing trees for shofars, or swimming to find the shofar, or bringing the water or the knives for the baby. That's not the shalas that happen for us. But many, many of the shalas that come up for us, and if the shalas involve different situations involving electricity, and the question becomes, how are we going to view electricity? Are we going to view it as a deraisa, we're going to do it as a derabbanan. So obviously we're not going to do it ourselves, but we're going to ask a non-Jew to do some kind of a device involving electricity. Or we're going to say that's a mirli yakam on a deraisa, which would be off limits at all times. Or do we say no, it's a mirli yakam on a derabbanan, which a makom mitzvah would be permissible. So halacha l'maisa, say it's uncomfortable, some kind of a makom mitzvah, we want to ask a non-Jew to turn on an air conditioner, we want to ask a non-Jew to do something with lights. Those are those examples of deraisas, which would be off-limits, even at the Emir Yaakov, or those only in the Dirabbanan. So the consensus view of all the Poskim is that when it comes to electricity that involves lights, especially incandescent bulbs, or even as well as fluorescent bulbs, it's not the same also, for technical reasons, basically lights are considered to be deraisa. We assume that's an outright prohibition in the Torah, of lo sevar eish b'chom ha-shoseichem yom ha-shabbos, so turning on a light is also in the Torah. If that's the case, then to ask a non-Jew to turn on the light would be very problematic, unless you would have some reason to believe that you could rely on those opinions that Amir Yaakov, even on deraisas, is mutter b'macha mitzvah. But again, we're not going with that. We're going with conventional wisdom that Amir Yaakov and deraisas is off limits. Therefore, one should not be asking a non-Jew to turn on lights. However, other kinds of devices which are not lights, which although are electric, one could argue that maybe that's not a nisa deraisa. That was a big machlokes in the Chazanish and others. It's just the mere electricity in nisa deraisa. The Chazanish had his unique shita that any time you pots or anything, anytime you turn on any electric switch, anything, that's automatically asur min haTorah because of bona, because you're building something, you're constructing something, you're making something which otherwise wasn't functionable into being functionable. That's considered to be bona d'oraisa. And others, including Rav Shlomo Zalman, suggested that that's not the case, that maybe there are other isur, and maybe isurim d'rabbanan, a variety of different possible other isurim d'rabbanan, but d'oraisa perhaps it's not. If one is willing to be makel on that shiloh, that electricity without light is only the rabbanon, so then one would be significantly more makel in the realm of a merely hakam. So there are different minhagim, different rabbanon today, how we view electricity. And electricity with light is deraisa, off limits. Without lights, one can begin to possibly negotiate. But I thought about in this halacha that we do follow the Shittas Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, that a shvus to shvus, b'mochom mitzvah, b'mochom tzad, b'mochom cholik tzas, etc., perhaps hasid mamol, all the above is permissible. It has its roots in the sugya in Maseches Eruvin about the water for the baby. Is there any other mokor, is there any other din in the Gemara that bears out this idea? So we have to go back to a sugya that we spoke about when we first introduced Mir Yaakov. That was a Gemara that appeared in Maseches Gittin. I didn't put that Gemara itself in the Rambam, so I put the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam's quoting of that Gemara. The Gemara said in the beginning of Maseches Gittin that if you want to buy a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael, so that's considered to be something of utmost significance. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, we want to try to get the land out of the non-Jewish hands into the Jewish hands. So we are strongly encouraging people to buy land in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says, what if you have to buy that land on Shabbos itself, and you have to sign a document with a non-Jew? So to sign the document itself on Shabbos is out of the question. You can't violate the Malach Deraisa just to buy land in Eretz Yisrael. But the Gemara says what you can do is you can ask a non-Jew to represent you, to sign for you, and that would be okay. Why is that okay? Because presumably it's such a tremendous mitzvah, such a great tzorech, and therefore we're going to override the Isra of Amir Eli Yaakov. So if you remember back from a few weeks ago, it's a deraisa. So according to most of the Rishonim, Eretz Yisrael was the exception to the rule. It means basically the starting point is you can't violate Amir Eli Yaakov for any mitzvah, with the exception of one or two, and this is the one or two, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And that was a simple pshat in the Gemara. There were those who extrapolated from that Gemara, we spoke about a few weeks ago, the Shita of the Bala Itur, based on that understanding, he said, well, what's the difference between Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and any other mitzvah? And that was the source for that Das Yochid, that Amir Eli Yaakov is lifted for all Mekamos mitzvah. But we don't generally follow that view. Is there any other way of reading this Gemara? Is there any other way of reading the Gemara Maseches Gittin that it's not referring to a Deraisa? How could that be? How could it not be a Deraisa? Kosei is obviously one of the 39 Melachos. How can writing a document, signing your name, not be a Deraisa? So in the third of the Mamakomos, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the din in Simin Shinvav in Shabbos, Mutl liknos bayis b'eretz Yisrael min ha'en Yehudi, b'Shabbos v'chosim v'mala b'yarkos. You can have the non-Jew sign for you, like you, etc. That would be okay. Hagoh, shalohem b'ksav shalohem. De'eino osu rak midirabonar mishum yishuv eretz Yisrael lo gozru. So the Ramah adds quite a chiddush to this din. The Ramah says, well, guess what? Signing your name is not going to be a deraisa. Writing up the document is not going to be a deraisa. What happened to the Malach of Kesef? So the Ramah is quoting from the Arzarua, who says that the Malach of deraisa of Kosev is only violated if you write in Lashon HaKodesh. If you write in Hebrew, you write in Ksav Ashuris, and you write in Hebrew characters, that's the Issa Deraisa of writing. Any other writing in any other language is only the Midirabanan, and therefore there is a Ruach claims that I must quote this as a Ruach Halacha, therefore you're allowed to ask a Goy to do it for you, B'mokam Mitzvah, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because it's no different than any other Shvus to Shvus B'mokam Mitzvah. So what Ramah just did in one fell swoop, he told us an unbelievable chiddush in the Malach of Kosev. The Kosev deraisa is only Lashon HaKodesh, and based on that, he gave us the insight into that Gemara in Maseches Gittin, not what we thought. We thought the Gemara in Gittin was telling us, wow, there's something so special about Eretz Yisrael, that it's Deich Yisurim Derabbanan from Eli Yaakov, it's the exception to the rule. And so it is very special, but that's not what the Gemara is telling us. The Gemara is just telling us it's the same as Milan, the same as Shofar, the same as Ta'a, the same as any other mitzvah. But the underlying premise of this Ramah, the Yoz HaRuah, is quite shocking that writing in other languages would only be Midir Rabbanan.
I was just thinking, I was saying that if we ask this prophet to write for us,
so I guess he's writing in English. If he's writing in English, then it's not so bad. Okay. The question is, can we accept this Ramah? Such a mechudishtik idea. So this is a very, very difficult Ramban. What makes this Ramban as a rule so difficult is that it seems to be outright against the Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos. The Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos says, HaKosev B'chol Loshon Chayev. The Mishnah uses the phrase Chayev. Chayev always means the Araisa. And the Mishnah says B'chol Loshon. The rice in any language. So what's the Ramban talking about? What's the Ozeruah talking about? So the interesting, just historically, that the Ozeruah, though it was a Rishon, it was written quite some time ago, it was in a Ksav Yad, it was in a manuscript, and for many, many years people didn't have access to this Ozeruah. So the Ozeruah was quoted, the Rishon quoted the Ozeruah, but for 500 years, nobody actually saw the Ozeruah inside. It was sitting somewhere in Rome, in the Vatican, somewhere, in some Ksav Yad somewhere. So some of the Achronim knew about the Ozeruah, the Ramah quoted the Ozeruah, whether the Ramah himself saw it or don't know, and they were trying to guess, what would the Ozeruah do with this Kasha? It's such a bomb Kasha. The Mishnah says the Pharisee, Shekosei B'chalosh and Eschayim, and the Ozeruah all of a sudden told us, it's not true, but if you write in English, you write in another language, it's only Midrash. What was Pshat? So the Prima Godin came up with a fascinating insight, a Lomda Shavuot, to explain away this Ozeruah. So says the Prima Godin, if you look really carefully at the Loshon of the Mishnah, the Mishnah says that Kosev B'chol Loshon is Chayev. It doesn't say Kosev B'chol Ksav is Chayev. There's a difference between Ksav and Loshon. Ksavon B'chol Shonon, that's a little bit jumping ahead to Miguel Sester. That's the next sentence in theory down the line. Shon B'baris Padachim, we're almost there. So Ksavon B'chol Shonon, there's a difference between language and writing and script. So says the Prima Godim, HaKosev B'chol Loshon Chayev. That means it doesn't matter what words you're writing, in the sense it doesn't matter whether it's a word that's meaningful in Hebrew or it's a word that's meaningful in English or meaningful in Spanish. You name the language, it doesn't matter. But the one thing that you have to do is the characters that you use have to be Hebrew characters. Have to be Ksav Ashuris. The Torah was describing official Ksav Ashuris. It wasn't referring to writing in ABCs. It was talking about writing Aleph Beis Gimel. You want to write an English word in Aleph Beis Gimel? That you chai for. As we've seen in Ramosha. Ramosha wrote all shuvahs like that. Whenever he came to an English word, he wrote. When Ramosha wanted to write the word car, so he wrote car, kuf aleph resh. When he wanted to write machine, he wrote mem aleph shin yud nun. So the Prima Godim said, that's what the Mishnah means. Hakaisi b'chol loshon chayev. Even though kuf aleph resh is not a word in Hebrew, but you're using Hebrew characters to write it, you would be chayev. Masha Einken, if you use English characters to write a word, then you're definitely going to be potter of Allah. So then it's only going to be a derabbanan. But along the shavuot that the Prima Godim gives, it's beautiful, it makes a lot of sense, and it fits into the loshon of the Mishnah. Everything's gevaldik. It's only one small technical problem, is that the Prima Godim didn't see the Ozeruah, and the Mishnah Berurah did see the Ozeruah. Because the days of the Mishnah Berurah, the Ozeruah was ready in print. So the Mishnah Berurah says the Kavalik Teretz, but the Ozeruah asks the same cash on himself and doesn't give that Teretz, which leads us to believe that's not the correct Teretz. So what is the correct Teretz? So the Ozeruah gives what we would consider to be the more difficult Teretz. The Ozeruah quotes, but he claims as Yerushalmi, it's B'chon Yisrael Yerushalmi, where the Yerushalmi has a comment on the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says, HaKosu B'chol Loshon is Chayev, so the Yerushalmi says, Kagon Alpha Beta. So it says, go on Alpha Beta. What's Alpha Beta? Greek. Also, in the young a little bit. Alpha Beta. So comes there as a ruin says, why does Rishami say go on Alpha Beta? He never heard of any other language. Why does it say Spanish? I mean, yeah, okay, that was the other language that was prevalent in those days. So the Ozeruah says, no, that the Rishami is explaining to us that B'chol Loshon doesn't mean literally B'chol Loshon. B'chol Loshon means other languages, or more correctly said, other language, namely Greek. Greek is special. Greek is unique. That the halacha considers Greek to be an official ksav loshon, and therefore, if a person writes in Greek, he would be chayev. If you write in Hebrew characters, Hebrew words, you chayev. If you write in Greek characters, Greek words, you chayev. If you write ABCs, you write other words, other language, other ksavim, you're not going to be chayev. Not that there's a distinction between the script and the language. Not like the Prima Godim said. The real distinction is between Hebrew and Greek on the one hand, and other languages on the other. Where do we ever hear such a wild idea that Greek somehow is a special, unique language? So that's the Gemara, Maseches Megillah. The Gemara talks about the possibility, according to some, of actually writing a Sefer Torah in Greek. The Gemara quotes one opinion that says that you can write a Sefer Torah either in Hebrew, if we write, or you can write it in Greek. Because it says, Yafta Lakim Liyethes, V'yishkon Go L'Shem. So one Tana says that the Torah gives a special significance to Yafes, special significance to Greek. Some of that's considered to be a special, not that it's a Kurdish language, but that's considered to be an official language that the Torah sanctions. Other languages, some have no chashivas, other some have no chashivas on the level of deraisa. So again, it's a very difficult idea, but that's what the Ozeru in fact says. So whether the Ozeru was referring to script versus language, like the people got in thought, or the Ozeru was describing Hebrew and Greek versus other languages, the mice, it all comes out the same, namely according to the Ozeru, if you're right, with English characters, so you're not going to be chayav. That's only going to be a derabbanan, and that's the pshat of this Gemara in Maseches Gittin. Do we accept this as a ruah? So the Mishnah Berurah in the fourth of the Ramakamos explains this Ramah and says, "Ratzalomar aksiv azui midderabbanan, v'avishvus teshvus aydein yehudi, u'mishumachi tirmishum yishevet zro." The Ayin be'alach, he says, if you take a look at, he wrote the be'alach, he says, if you look at what I wrote in the be'alach, shebiyarnu, the das or the ruah das yichidohi. He says that it's a das yochid. He's mamish the only rishon, not the only one there, one or two others, but the overwhelming majority of rishon did not buy into this. The ema shum mokum b'shas. He says there's no source, there's nothing, there's no place in the Gemara that this idea really exists. The chol poskim chokma, everybody disagrees from the Rift, everybody disagrees. Usvilu the optics of Shalemism in the Raisa. The Bechol Lashon Chayev Kedisa B'Mishnah. Everybody else learned the Mishnah Kipshuto. Hayi the Rishalmi. So the Be'alach gave you a whole Shikul Torah what the Rishalmi meant. They didn't mean the way the Ozeru interpreted it. So comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, so the basic halacha is not like this Ozeru. The basic halacha is not like this Ramah. And therefore we assume halacha l'maisa, Mishnah Berurah says without any question, that writing in other languages is considered to be an absolute bona fide issur d'oraisa. So this just should push aside any possible kulas that people may think that, oh well, if I have to write, I'll write in English. No, there's no such kulas, nothing, zero. But we assume against this Ozeru. I remember the first time I ever heard of this Ozeru, I was in 8th grade. And the Rebbe wasn't learning Hilchos Shabbos. He was trying to give us a little bit of Musar. So I still remember for 35 years, so I still remember the Musa. So I remember he turned to us and he said, and he asked all the boys a question. Here's the question. Tell me, which is a bigger Aveira? Is it a bigger Aveira to do your English homework on Shabbos? Or is it a bigger Aveira to go to a not appropriate movie? That was the way he phrased the question. Which is the two? So all the hands went up. Rebbe, come on, that's the silliest question in the world. He said, to do English homework on Shabbos, that's Chol Shabbos. So remember he said to us, no, it's not true. He said, to do your English homework on Shabbos, according to some, it's only derabbanan. But to go to the movie, that's an issur d'oraisa l'chol hadayis. So when I got a little bit older, I realized that he was right about the movie part, but I'm not sure he was right about the writing on the Ksiv and Shabbos part. That if I had to give you a hierarchy, I don't think we found the Ozeru. So nobody should misquote me advocating going to the movies. I'm just saying that if you have a choice between writing on Shabbos in English or the movies, I'm not sure I would ask him that the movies are the first. But whatever it is, but at least the Muslim stuck for a little bit, and that was the first time I ever heard this. Heard about this Ozeru. It's got to be official. It's got to be an official ksav. Right.
Is there any advantage to writing with letters of one language or word in a second language, like what Moshe does? Is that not?
Anybody mean on Shabbos?
You on Shabbos, you wrote the word car in.
I don't think so, because the halacha is it gets a message across. It doesn't have, even if it's not an official. Stamos should be also there, right? So. If a person misspells something, he also has a Shabbos, you know. That doesn't have to be an official word, as long as it's getting the message across, I think so. The starting point of it, all we've been talking about, is that Amil Yachom is clearly prohibited, that's the starting point, and Amil Yachom is also not only on their Isis, it's also on their abundance also. The only thing is that if it's an Amil Yachom on a Dirabonin combined together with the Mokha Mitzvah, Tzorach, Hefzer, something like that, if you put the whole package together, then we can begin to negotiate a Kula. But just stop to think that Amil Yachom stam on a Dirabonin is Mutter, so that is not the case. Nevertheless, there is a unique situation where Amil Yachom may end up being Mutter precisely for the reason that it's not quite an Amil Yachom. It's a little bit confusing, but the Ramah addresses this in the fifth of the Ma'amar Kamos. The Ramah in the back of the page in Siman Reish and Gimel Sif Hei. So the Ramah addresses the following Shiloh. Going back to what we spoke about already in the last mini-series that we had about heating up food on Shabbos, we said that obviously to heat up food directly on Shabbos, to put it into the oven or on the fire or something, is a problem in the Rabbanan for a variety of reasons. Most of the folks can assume that not only am I not allowed to do it, I'm not even allowed to ask the non-Jew to do it, but there was a little bit of a stunt, a little bit of a trick that was done in the days of the Ramah to, in a sense, circumvent this halacha to get the food to be heated up to a non-Jew. Not to directly ask the non-Jew to heat up the food, that would be a problem, but they used to do as follows. L'chei no'agim, she'einam Yehudim otzim ha'kederes min ha'tanurim she'madmin behem, u'moshivin otzim eitzel tanu beis ha'choref o'alav, u'mav eres ha'shivcha ha'charka ha'tanur ha'hu ve'aydei zeh ha'kederes chozim v'nesachim. So very often they would have to take the pots out of the fire, off the fire, out of the oven, whatever it was, and now you had pots that are sitting around on the table, sitting around the floor, and they've gotten cold. And we're scratching the head trying to figure out how we're going to get these pots of food warm again. We prefer not to eat the cold chili. So what do we do? So we have the non-Jew do as follows. We have the non-Jew take this pot and put it right next to an oven that happens to be off right now. There's nothing burning. There's no fire in the oven right now. So far, so good. But now, the next thing I want to do is, I want to ask the non-Jew to light up the fire in the oven. Well, right, so I have to do that. It's a malacha deraisa. Well, this is a throwback to what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. For the purpose of keeping people warm, to prevent people from being too cold, a merely achav is permissible. So I'm going to ask the non-Jew to light up the fire in order to heat up the house. It just happens to be, lo and behold, there's a pot of chulin sitting there as well. Now, I cannot ask the non-Jew to heat up the chulin. That would be a really achav on something which wouldn't be necessary, so to speak. But I'm asking the non-Jew to heat up the oven, to heat up the house. The Tana Beis HaChorev is to heat up the whole house. That's permissible. And it just happens to be, lo and behold, there's a pot of chulin there that I told him to put there 2 minutes earlier. That's okay. So what's the cheshbon? So the Ramah says, oh, so to warm there, because since it's makom chol, we assume that people are going to catch cold, they're going to get sick. So heating up the house is not so terrible. The problem is, what right do I have to ask the non-Jew if I know full well that the chol is there? So this touches on really an issue of what we call psik reisha, something we spoke about in the past. In other contexts, if I want to do an action such and such, which technically the action is okay, there's no real malach involved in the action, but I know for a fact that a malach is going to result. So that's what's called a psik reisha. So generally the rule is, psik reisha is a problem on Shabbos. Here, what the Ramah is telling us is that the non-Jew is really heating up the oven in order to heat up the house, which is technically, quote-unquote, permissible. Amelia Achma is permissible on that. However, there's a psik reisha involved that every time I ask the non-Jew to please put wood into the oven to heat up the house, since there's a pot of chulin sitting there, there's a psik reisha that the pot of chulin is going to get hot. That's called an amirli akum on a psik reisha. An amirli akum on a psik reisha is technically permissible. So if we take a look at the Mishnah Berurah in the sixth of the Maamar Kamos, lekach nogin, it's the second law, lekach nogin she'en Yehudi nosed et tashosh neskar legamrei al atan or kon shehusak. Shaz leke shumisa. There's nothing wrong with asking the non-Jew to put the pot of chulin to my cold oven. The non-Jew is about to put the wood into the fire. That's okay. Why is that okay? Like we said, people are going to get sick otherwise. His eager intention, his main intention is to heat up the house. There's a psik reisha. No, because ma'am the amira le en Yehudi the shvus to leis b'maisa lo machmerinan kulechai to show you out the psik reisha. Says the Mishnah Berurah, when you combine a mili akam on a psik reisha, that's okay. There's no issur of mili akam on a psik reisha. What's the rationale for this? Pashtus, the rationale is, it's very simple. I'm not asking him to do the malacha. A mili akam means I'm not allowed to ask the non-Jew to do malacha for me. What did I ask him to do? Let's go through the cheshbon. I asked him to take a pot of chulin and put it on by a cold oven. There's no malach yet. I asked him, please put wood into the oven to heat up the house because people are getting sick. That's a malach, but that's mutter. It happens to be that I also accomplished that the chulin got hot. That's true, but I didn't tell him to do that. I didn't ask him to do that. So since I didn't ask him to do that, that's technically not called a merely akum. Let's take this into a little bit more modern day application of this. A person comes home from shul Friday night, and they're about to open up the refrigerator, and they remember, we forgot to turn the light off in the refrigerator. So we know now, the minute we open up the fridge, the light's going to go on. So obviously I can't open up the light, I can't open up the door myself. Can I ask a non-Jew to open up the door for me? So Rav Moshe said yes, because this is a classic application of a Amir Yachon of Psik Reisha. If I would say to the non-Jew, do me a favor, please turn on my light, that's out of the question. I'm not asking him to turn on the light. I'm asking him to open up the refrigerator. And I'll say to him, by the way, there's a light inside. I don't want you to turn on the light. I'm asking you to open up the refrigerator. That's all I'm asking him to do. I'm asking him to open up the refrigerator. There's a psik reisha that the light's going to go on. That's fine. That's what the Mishnah Berurah said. It's a psik reisha. Yedem Yom Yachom, the Ramah said, was permissible. So if Shlomo Zalman...
Doesn't that be in the guise of a highly... or something like that?
No, because it only had to be in the guise of the Choli, because that, in order to permit the non-Jew to put the wood into the fire, he had to come out to the Choli. Here, I'm asking him to do is to open up the refrigerator. No, but I'm not asking him to turn on the bulb. I'm asking him to open up the refrigerator door. Refrigerator door is mutter. So the refrigerator door for the non-Choli is like to put in the wood in for the Choli. So it comes in from his Alman, and he says he's not so sure that that dimya, that comparison is correct. So this is from his Alman, you have to be very careful before you label something as a merely a psikration. Psikration means, I'm doing action X, and I know that action Y will result, that's called a psik reisha. But the idea is that X and Y are really two distinct actions. Over here, argues Rosh Hashanah, how do you turn on a light in the refrigerator? Identify the action of how to give you instructions how to turn on a light in the refrigerator. How do you do that? We open up the door. That, it's the same mice. It's one action. I didn't tell him to open up the light, but I told him to open up the door, which means, translates to mean, i.e., opening up the light. That is the only way, or the normal way of opening up the light. That's not called the segregation. That's called the mice mamish. That's called also mice. If that's called chada mice, that's called one action. So then basically when I ask the non-Jew to open up the refrigerator door, that's the equivalent of me asking him to turn on the light, which is a problem, and I can't have the food for the rest of the Shabbat. That's really another way to get to this food. So that was Rav Shlomo Zalman's question against this Pesach every month.
You're talking about the Gemara, the classic case of segregation. You drag something across the lawn, right, and you're creating a ditch. I can ask you to create a ditch, right? There's a different way of creating the ditch. In the same way, there's no other way of turning
it. But you're arguing like Rav Shlomo Zalman.
Like, I'm arguing like with Moshe.
No, forget it. I think your example is right for Shlomo Zalman.
There's another way of creating a ditch. There's no other way of turning the light off. There's another way of creating a ditch.
So the Gemara calls the dragging of the ditch of secretion. The Gemara says, if it's a Davish Miskav, you don't know the ditch is going to make them
for sure.
But if I know it's going to happen, then it's not awesome. So
that's a secretion, right? That's good to do it for me.
That would be okay. Right. He asked the guy to pull the chair, that would be okay.
Now, that's
a, no, according to everybody, because that's clearly a psik reisha, because I could theoretically split the two. Whereas the opening of the refrigerator, that is the way to do it. So Maisa Shrek HaChoy, once at a Shiloh, it happened in Washington Heights, back a couple of years ago. It was Friday night, we were sitting in the Beis Medrash, and somebody came in, I don't know if I told the story over here, I told it over another shiur recently, about the car, I think I told it over here. A fellow walks into the Beis Medrash and he says that he left his keys in the car, the door open, Maisa, the whole story. He wants to ask the security guard to basically open up his car door for him on Shabbos. So the worst case scenario is that the light's going to go on. So the Shiloh said, can I ask the non-Jew to open up the car door, knowing full well that the light's going to go on? Is that like this case of a real Yaakov on the Psik Reisha? So my initial reaction was, I told him, Moshe says, that's refrigerator. It says, Moshe the same.
But what if you ask him to get the keys inside, why not?
No, but the problem is that I'm asking him to open up the door. So he has to open up the door now. But the problem is that if it's impossible to get those keys without either breaking the window or opening the door. So anyway, so I thought that was the country motion was mutter. So one of the call at the time, because back when I was before his marriage, the story. So one of the guys the call said to me, they showed me this footnote in Shmuel Shabbos Kochasa, according to Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman wasn't sure that it was mutter based on his svar about the refrigerator. So it sounds like the same shaila. Is how do you turn on a light in the car by opening up the door? One could maybe argue not that way. You know, the light in the car. Right. The light in the car is normal to also to push the button on and off depending when to leave the light. So maybe it's not as bad as the refrigerator. So we were poopling at the time. So I thought, according to Moshe, for sure was mutter. According to Shlomo Zalman, maybe it's the same, maybe it's not. So back and forth. Tachlis, the good news and the bad news. The good news is that we didn't have to answer the shayla. The bad news is the car was broken into already. But at that point, there wasn't that much left to pass, you know. But I guess the God held like the emotion. That's mutter.
The tape,
yeah, it falls up, yeah. Yeah. You're stuck. A person's stuck. I'm going to line Ramayah. I think Mikra didn't get line Ramayah. Ramayah held that that's up to gracious. Gracious. The Admiral Yaakov, Mokum Tzor Shabbos. I think Mikra didn't is Mokum. Anyway, so.
There's a question
early on,
but I missed a couple of sessions. The Rabbi talking about when he needs a Talmira. Talmira, yes.
Yeah, so if it's a mirror, it depends on the type of mirror it is. If it's a remez, shalom b'derech tziva, without mentioning the malacha, then it's mutter. So I can just say to the non-Jew, I have food in the fridge. Now if I say to him, can you help me with that, that's called derech tziva, that would be a problem. Or if I would start giving him a whole speech about why I can't open up refrigerator lights, that would also be a problem. So I have to say to him very, very bland the statement, there's food in my refrigerator. Okay? I'm hungry. I'm very, very hungry. So, I sometimes have problems. Whenever we have issues of remez, shalom derech tziva, so sometimes the Amir Yaakov, the Yaakov we're dealing with, very often, there's a language barrier to begin with. So when you start to have a remez, shalom derech tziva, without mentioning the halacha, on top of the fact that sometimes they don't understand you, you don't understand them, so you usually get the opposite result that you're trying to get. But in theory, if you could pull off such a remez, that would be more. And if you're stuck, if all else fails, so then Mikra didn't start quenching by Shalis with him.
Do you want to mind doing that?
Thank you.